ear, piece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley
and Tim Coker.
And yeah, see, Tim Coker back from the wilds. I don't know, off planet, was it? Maybe his little excursion. So, Tim, welcome back, first of all. How was your trip?
Oh, thanks. It was fantastic. It was a little more like go, go, go than I like to do. Usually, I like to like pick one area, research the hell out of it, rent like an apartment or house, and just stay there and explore it. And this time, we were like in four different countries, go, go, go. So, but I mean, that's like, if I'm complaining about that, that is like first world problems, pretty
exactly.
much the definition.
Yeah.
But it was great. We started in England, and I'm not going to, you know, do the whole show you my whole travel slideshow, but I managed to hit a lot of nerdy points of interest on the trip that some of our listeners would want to hear about.
Definitely.
So we landed at Heathrow, and first thing, got in the car and started driving because, A, I love driving on the left, and B, it's the only way to go where you really want to go when you travel, and if you have a very little time, you don't have to wait around on buses and trains. So car for me, and it enabled us to stop off on our way to our main destination for the day. We stopped off at this village called Aldbourne, which is in Wiltshire, just kind of the West Country from London. And it's known mainly among nerds as the location of the 1971 Doctor Who story, The Demons.
Oh, yeah.
Where Roger Delgado is Mr. Magister, you know, the fake vicar and all that. So that village is still there, and it's amazing. You go there and you can, you know, we had lunch at the pub that they took into the Cloven Hoof pub for the show. And right there, it's right on the village green, you know, although kind of thing happens when you're traveling. You can't predict that it happens to be the weekend of the village carnival. So the whole village green was like jammed with carny rides they were setting up. But, you know, there was the beautiful church they have, and so much of the action of the episode takes place around there. So it's pretty cool to walk down the same path that, you know, that you see Roger Delgado running down in the episode as the master, or like where Unit has that shootout with the gargoyle. So, you know, it was fun.
Did you try to reenact any of the scenes or anything?
I did not. I think if I'd been part of, you know, because Doctor Who tours go there, and I'm sure that people get into that if they do, but it was just me and my wife, and we were happy just taking pictures. We wanted to go up to the mound, you know, the barrow that they're excavating in the episode, the actual, because there's a real, you know, Neolithic burial near the village, but it was a little too far for us to walk and still do the other things we wanted to do. So we did not get to go and see the Devil's Hunt, alas. But it was great, and I totally recommend it to any fan of Pertwee or a Doctor Who, because it was just such a treat to actually see the place and walk in the same places and all that.
Did it look very much the same, or was it completely different? How was that?
Well, the carnival rides definitely make it different, but the actual quality of the buildings and everything, what's funny is when you watch the episode, you would really be forgiven for thinking that the whole village is just the buildings that are there around the square, because they do such a good job of bringing that whole area to life. But it actually goes on for quite a ways. And so what you get is you see everything you remember, but then there's more that was conveniently just out of frame. But yeah, it's great. You know, the only thing that really takes you out of it is all the modern cars. But yeah, it was cool. And after that, we went to our main destination, which was this town called Avebury, which is a little village that's nestled in actually the center of a massive stone circle. I don't actually have the dimensions in mind, but you can imagine it's pretty big, and it has a giant earthwork ditch around it. And it was the location of a British TV show from the late 70s called Children of the Stones. Eric, I know you've seen it.
I've seen the Stones of Blood. I thought that was what you...
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, Children of the Stones was actually a seven-part miniseries. It starred Blake from Blake 7 as a scientist who goes to this village with his son, and they encounter creepy doings, you know, like you do in the British countryside. So that was really a treat, because that place is incredible, not just for that, but also because if you take a little hike from there, you get to see a bunch of other cool stuff from the same period. The whole place is actually a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Like, it's really amazing. And one of the best things you see is a long barrow. Now, you know, a barrow is a tomb, right? It's a mound that people built and put a stone tomb inside of.
Okay.
And in this case, the long barrow goes on for, God, I don't know, it feels like an eighth of a mile. I don't know if it's really that long. But there's a tomb in the front of it with these really impressive standing stones blocking it, which was a location in the episode in Children of the Stones. But the other thing that was really cool about it is that it really took me back to Lord of the Rings, which a lot of stuff did on this trip, because... You know, Tolkien in Lord of the Rings has Frodo and company encounter this Barrow Wight, if you remember. It's not in the movie, but it's in the book. And this is from, you know, these legends of buried treasure and buried chieftains under these mounds that Tolkien himself would have grown up around. So to see such a splendid example, you really imagine your own D&D party, you know, going in or whatever. So that was just, I cannot recommend Avery enough for any nerd who likes that kind of stuff, because it was great.
You mean there was something Hobbit related that Peter Jackson didn't put into the Hobbit trilogy?
Oh, well, see, this is from Lord of the Rings. That's why he could have adapted it. Yeah. But I agree. I'm surprised, because I think that pretty much every straw that could have been clutched at was so far. So the next day we had to go to London. Our main thing was to go see Kate Bush in London. That was amazing too, but it's not really nerd related, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But on the way we went to Stonehenge, where, as you know, the demons dwell.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard something about the Banshees living and doing so well also. Also there, you know, aside from Stonehenge itself being amazing and having, you know, obviously the Pandorica is under there somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
Doctor Who has done such a great job of incorporating British landmarks that you think of it pretty much everywhere you go. So that was great. And you can see more barrows there too. They're off on the horizon. So it's really evocative. So, you know, then we went to London. I didn't find any Autons at the London Eye. And I did not see, you know, Kate Stewart's car coming out of the Tower of London. And most disappointingly,
well, apparently you didn't do it right.
Well, I left my psychic paper here in Chicago.
I see.
So, but we went to St. Peter's Cathedral, and I looked in vain for that the Cybermen marched down in the invasion from 1969.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really iconic scene where they're, you know, bomb, bomb, bomb coming down. And I think that those steps have been replaced by some very cool modern installation. But it's a pity, because, you know, you think, oh, hey, I get to walk like with stiff arms going down this thing. But
well, I know I got a question for you. In London, I know they've removed most of them, but they've left a few of the police call boxes in various areas. Yeah. Did you get to see one?
Not on this trip. When I went to London, like, I want to say 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, to visit the set of Captain America: The First Avenger, which is another story, which I should probably tell on this show sometime, right?
You should.
All right, we'll get to it next time. But but I did see one there at the Earl's Court tube station. They have one outside there, and I wasn't expecting it. I had no idea it would be there. And what's funny is I came in and out of this station like four or five times on the trip and never saw it. And when I got up like at 5 a.m. to catch my airport cab, I'm standing out there waiting for the cab on the street, and suddenly I'm like, what the? How did I not see this giant police box that I've walked past like 10 times? So...
Well, it just appeared. I mean,
see, exactly. The doctor must have gone somewhere.
Yeah.
But I totally recommend, if you're in London and you can do it, to swing by one of those police boxes, because to actually see one in context is pretty fabulous.
All right, let's hear it. What else did you get to do that I'm going to be even more jealous about?
Well, just one more that was really significant. I mean, we did pass through Paris for a night, mm-hmm. and I've been to Paris a couple of times, and this was two other times, I should say. And this was the first time I went and did not pay my respects at Count Scarlione's house from City of Death.
Oh, yeah.
And Doctor Who. Because, you know, those doors with the Medusa on it? Yeah, they're still there.
Oh, really?
And they're in a very popular neighborhood. So, yeah, you can, you know, well, I don't know if, you know, every time they go to Count Scarlione's house, you see the door, and then they have a shot looking up at the window. And that is all, you know, that's still there. And you often see people, you know, imposing by it. But I didn't go this time. And then, but the big one, honestly, like in terms of the most impressive site that I saw was called Pies Gloria. And this is significant for James Bond fans. It's in Switzerland. It was in the Lauterbrunnen Valley. And well, it's north of the Lauterbrunnen Valley. Wait, north. I shouldn't say north. It's straight up, basically. You take a cable car to a train to another cable car to another cable car, and you're on top of a mountain in this really sleek, metallic, high-tech facility that seems just like a place where a Bond villain would live, because it is. In the 1969 movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the plot required that Blofeld have a mountaintop base in the Alps, and so they were looking for locations, and they found out that this restaurant was being built. The idea was to make a rotating restaurant so you could see this 360 panorama of mountains, and the Bond people found out about it and pumped a bunch more money into it and developed it to have it done in time for their movie, but also to have it done to their specifications. And then they filmed a huge chunk of the movie there. I don't know if you remember that one. It's the one with George Lazenby and Telly Savalas. That place, you know, they were done with filming. And when you go there, it's a 100% 007 experience. They have signage and like...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they've got like George Lazenby standees you can pose with and whatever. But like you can get the 007 breakfast buffet, right? And it's pretty good because any Swiss breakfast buffet is mind-blowingly delicious.
But with a martini, it's even better.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get a little glass of champagne, I guess. But my stomach wasn't really having it because it was like first thing in the morning and I'm in this room that's slowly rotating.
Oh, yeah. Like
three cable cars and, you know, the air is thin. But it's pretty amazing because you sit there and you basically are eating in Blofeld's breakfast nook. You know, and it's phenomenal because it takes about a half hour, I think, for it to go all the way around. And if you go early, the view is so clear and it's just impossible not to be transitioned into, you know, wanting to see the guys, you know, parachute down with their skis and machine guns to come after 007 or whatever. And, you know, you look down in this like green valley and you imagine, you know, that it's easy to imagine that you're going to see the Riders of Rohan coming across it or whatever. It's a place that's very easy to let your own memories of books you've read or anything come back to you. Hmm. And what's interesting about the area is it had the same effect on J.R.R. Tolkien himself, because he went there in the 1920s. And this valley that we stayed in, the Lauterbrunnen Valley, has steep cliffs on all sides and waterfalls all over the place because of the alpine melt, you know, that's coming down.
Wow.
So basically he bases Rivendell on this valley. And when you're there, you cannot avoid thinking about it. It's spectacular, you know, and the Misty Mountains from The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
And Lord of the Rings, you know, those are inspired by these mountains in this region. And there's another mountain we went up called the Rothorn in German.
Which to mention the Led Zeppelin song.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Uh-huh. Misty Mountains.
Totally.
Which is based on Tolkien, but okay.
Based on Tolkien, yeah. And the Rothorn, which translates to Red Horn, which was the mountain that the Fellowship of the Ring almost buys it on when Saruman is sending the storm after them.
Oh, right.
So, you know, you realize that you're in this place that inspired Tolkien to make so much stuff that you love. And it's pretty special.
Yeah.
So while we're driving through the valley, I queued up the Lord of the Rings soundtrack on the iPod. And it was a perfect fit. Like a 10 out of 10. It was just great.
Sweet.
See, that's what I like about this, Tim. It's like you go on a trip to, you know, to Europe and you find these nerdy things that make it, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, going to Europe. But hey, look. Tolkien, you got Bond, you've got Doctor Who. It's like, that's the way to turn a good trip into fun.
It's funny, too, because I used to be self-conscious about, like, going to visit locations of things from Doctor Who or whatever on my trips, and now I don't even care.
I mean,
you go because you're interested in art or because you're interested in castles or whatever, or you go because you love Doctor Who, you know? It's all good.
Right, exactly.
And all these things are next to each other anyway, so I totally want to recommend anybody go to Switzerland, go to the Lauterbrunnen Valley. It'll blow your mind.
All right, I'll be there tomorrow. Oh, wait, no. You were jumping from place to place. It was all in a short period of time,
yeah, like
relatively.
2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks and all these places. Did you get any rest at all?
A little. I'm really lucky. My mom came from Germany, and so since I don't have her anymore, I like to go visit my German relatives and kind of get a little secondhand mom from them. And so when I visit them, it's very relaxing. We just kind of hang out, and they take me to things or take us to cool stuff that is close to their place. And like there's this one castle castle that isn't in any fantasy thing, but it is such a fantasy scenario. You know, it's this ruined castle on a hill. It's called Burg Beilstein. Well, A, there's an amazing restaurant there, which I never knew, and we ate there this time. But the last time they took us there, there's a sanctuary for wounded birds of prey there. So if somebody finds a wounded eagle or falcon or hawk or vulture or owl, they bring it here, and these people take care of it. And they've got a little zoo of these, you know, that can't really survive in the wild, but they do okay there. And you'll sit in the ruined courtyard of this place with the crumbling towers over you, which, you know, they're not so crumbling that you can't climb up in them and get an incredible view because you're in the middle of wine country too. But you're sitting in this ruined courtyard and the guy comes out and does like a show with the hawks and falcons and stuff flying right over your head. And, you know, how do you not have D&D associations sitting in a place like this?
It's
you
true.
Know? And so, you know, it's really easy to just squint your eyes and you imagine, you know, that the guy with the falcon on his wrist is wearing +2 leather armor, you know. So for guys like us, if you go over there, it's just candy for nerds over there. It's yeah. great.
Well, I was going to say, my paladin would definitely have a white falcon. I just want you to know that. So
beautiful.
Wow. So definitely sounds like you had fun. We're more than you know, happy to enjoy the trip, and we saw the pictures as you were posting them along the way. But we're even more happy that you're back talking nerdy with us. That's what's important.
Thanks.
Glad you had a good time, but hey, we needed you.
I missed you guys. I want to say one more thing, which is that I'm going to post on the Nerd Up Facebook page, I'm going to post some photos specifically about what I was talking about, just so that they're easy for y'all to see and maybe tell the story a little more visually. So hopefully by the time you guys are here in this episode, those will be
there. Yeah, while you were off gallivanting in Europe, Eric and I were hanging out with horror movie stars. So, you know, it's
beautiful.
All good. It's all good. Excellent. Actually, before we go into anything else on this podcast, I got to talk about NerdCon coming up here in Robinson, here in Crawford County. It's coming up December 20th. And normally we've had what's called Nerd Day, and that we built this Nerd Day was to launch what we're calling NerdCon. And this December is going to be the biggest one ever, and this is the one that's actually, we've changed the name to NerdCon rather than Nerd Day because it's more than just a day, it's an event. And we're going to have, of course, the typical Magic the Trading Card tournaments, we're going to have those throughout. We're going to have Warhammer games going on, all sorts of RPGs. There's going to be D&D. Also, if you want to learn how to play something, perfect time. They got demos of almost every game. Last time we were at, when they had a Nerd Day, I learned this new Doctor Who deck building game. That was just, at first it was confusing, but once we started playing, it was one of the most fun games I'd ever had based on Doctor Who, and we had a blast playing it. So that's the thing about it. You can come out and test out different games. You can, if you've never played Magic, they'll teach you. If you want to, you know, hey, I haven't played Dungeons & Dragons in 30 years, well, now you can, just for fun, just for a day. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. December 20th, it's going to be at the Robinson Community Center in Robinson, Illinois. It starts around, I think about 9 a.m., it's either 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. I know I got to be there at 7 so I can load in the stuff, but 9 a.m. I think is the actual start time, and it goes on to about 10 o'clock at night. We're going to have cosplay contest at 7 o'clock. That's already scheduled. We're going to be hosted by one of our local cosplay stars. His name's Brady. He does the Joker at a lot of area cons, and he does a great Joker. He's going to be emceeing the event. And let's see, what else is going on? We've got, well, just about anything to do with gaming and nerdiness is going to be there. We're going to be having a few. So it's going to be a fun day. December 20th, Saturday, all day long. $5 is all it is to enter this glorious, fabulous world of nerdness. And then again, cosplay contest at 7. There's no cost for the cosplay, just your charge of admission. And you could win, I think, the $50 gift card is the number one prize, and second and third would be a $25 gift card. So just kind of fun thing to do. So that's what's going on December 20th, Robinson, Illinois, at the Community Center. Be there, if you're a nerd, anyway. All right, let's get on with this regular podcast thing, because we got some catching up to do. I tell you what, I love the fact that the new television season is upon us. Got our shows coming back. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back. In fact, let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. first, guys. What did you guys think of the season premiere?
I liked it. It feels like a long time since season one ended. It took me a few minutes to get back into, you know, what everyone's up to and where everyone's at. I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about it because it's just they're just kind of kicking it off. One thing, and I'm sure this is a top of everyone's mind to our fans, is, you know, poor Fitz.
Poor as ever.
Yeah,
I hope that they something happens with that. And I felt, I don't know, Coulson says something about, you know, basically dismissing him like he's gone or he's a lost cause. And I was like, really? I mean, come on. You know, this is a show about relationships and solid and supporting one another. And I mean, there's a lot of that that goes into the show. And I was like, really? You're just giving up on Fitz like that?
Well,
I don't think that was necessarily the case. I know he made that statement, but I think if it were really a case of, oh, you know, he's a lost cause, he wouldn't even be there. Colson would not let him on this team. I think there's a reason behind that, and he's just kind of playing it off, you know, in case the worst happens. I think that was kind of the hint on that aspect.
And here's, and this is completely based on nothing. This is just a thought that popped into my head. Just, it may have no validity at all. But, I mean, I see what you're saying about something's going to happen with Fitz. Now, what that something is anyone's guess. But what if, I'm just theorizing here, that the same thing, that maybe the same thing that healed Colson and Sky, maybe he gets access to that and something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And maybe he becomes unstable and becomes something of a, not necessarily a villain, but maybe like Deathlok, someone that kind of treads that line, who's unpredictable, they can't really trust. Because, I mean, I don't see Fitz as becoming evil, but he's lost part of his mind, and maybe if, however, that's restored, if it's restored, may cause some sort of rift. But anyway, that was the first thing that occurred to me. But overall, and I don't know if this occurred to you guys or not, it felt very dark to me. I mean, darker than I think the show has been so far. And it's an interesting choice for the first episode of the season to, and I mean, of course, I knew that, okay, what's her name? Xena, Warrior Princess.
Lucy Lawless.
Yeah.
Yes, Lucy Lawless was going to be in the show because they've been, you know, publicizing that all during the off season. And are we talking spoilers here?
Yeah. I don't think it'd be a problem.
All right. I didn't expect her to be killed off at the end of the episode. I mean, you know, I didn't expect that she would be a permanent member of the show, but I thought, you know, if they were getting Lucy Lawless, they would use her more than one episode. So that was kind of strange and unexpected. But just overall, I thought that the whole atmosphere was really dark. And then, of course, the I liked the fact, and this is, and none of this is a complaint, it was just kind of a surprise. It kind of took me aback. And I like that, oh God, I forget the character's names. The guy, the turncoat, Ward. I like that they brought him into this first episode and that they're kind of keeping him in the basement kind of as a Hannibal Lecter type.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a funny thing when that scene with him came up. Just before that was a commercial break. Before she went down and talked to him during that commercial break, Isaac goes, you know, it's really going to suck now that Ward's not in it, because, you know, that was his favorite character. And he goes, it's really going to suck. And then they come back from the break, and there they go. And it's like, oh, I guess he's still in it.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, and I think it would be unscrupulous for them to file him away or not keep him in the show, because I think he is an intriguing character, and I think that's one of the storylines that I think people are wondering where this is going to go with Agent Ward. So anyway, that's pretty much all I have to say. I enjoyed the episode, but I'm it's just kind of whet my appetite to see what's coming up for the rest of the season.
Well, let me give my...
Oh, and I like the fact that we got to see Agent Carter and the Howling Commandos at the beginning of the episode, too.
I love those characters in the Howling Commandos are just awesome. The Asian guy with the Brooklyn accent just rocks my world. He was so awesome. But the whole characterization, they're very comic booky, and I loved it. I love that aspect. Like, I can't even think of the actor's name or the character, but he was like a... I don't know, he looked like a typical, almost Dick Tracy type mug, you know?
He's been in lots of stuff. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember.
Dum Dugan.
Yeah, like, that's it.
He's always been Nick Fury's right-hand man, since the very first Nick Fury comic.
Yeah, and when I saw him, I'm like, oh my gosh, and his face, his facial expressions and everything, just perfect. It is like, that's very comic booky. I love it. Let me give you a quick response here of the series. One thing, I like the fact that they're bringing in villains, like Absorbing Man. That was cool. They're really tying in the Marvel Universe with, you know, the whole, again, the Agent Carter and the Howling Commandos. They're going to tie that in. They brought in some other villains. They're also talking about Mockingbird will be making an appearance sometime soon. I mean, they're really bringing the Marvel Universe into this, and they're not afraid. And, I mean, the first season, it seems like, okay, it's going to be Marvel without superheroes, but now they're bringing them in. Now it's actually going to be superheroes. So this season, it might have started a little bit dark, but they left it in a dark place. I think that was the reason why they had to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, Hydra ruined everything, as we saw in Captain America. So,
hell, Hydra!
I thought it was a very strong start. I mean, you know, for me, the last season was, for a long time, an exercise in wanting to like it more than I was actually liking it. And I think that by the end of it, I was really sold. And it's been interesting for me that I've been able to go back and rewatch a lot of the first season. I've just been kind of, you know, while I'm working or whatever, I'll have the episodes on. And just seeing how it all builds up, it really puts me in a good place to watch this season. And I actually think that the dark start is a really good idea, because one of the things that was so frustrating about the first half of the first season was just how kind of complacent everything was. And everything was just kind of nice, and they would win and do good stuff. You know what I mean? Because they were trying to set up a status quo that they could then break up, which I totally get.
But it had a very A-team feeling.
Yeah, well said. So with this, I thought that actually worked really well, because, like, I'm trying to find the best way to articulate it. I think, like, I get annoyed sometimes when I watch a show where there is some kind of omnipresent, omnipotent, great and wise entity that keeps everything nice. And I'm thinking about Star Trek The Next Generation and the Federation, where Babylon 5 really, like, I always loved Star Trek, but when I saw Babylon 5, I suddenly realized how much authentic human conflict was missing from Star Trek The Next Generation and the subsequent Star Trek shows, because it has so much more of a utopian vision of human development, right? And all the way through Star Trek, I was just so frustrated that, you know, nothing ever felt like it had any stakes, and there was always the great and wise Federation that was full of incredibly wise and well-socialized people who would come out and lend their perspective, and they'd all hang out on the Galactic Living Room set, you know, and and I mean, this makes me rag on the show, and it's just that I was starting to realize that Babylon 5 was more my thing, you know, with a little more grit. And when they announced Star Trek Voyager, I was so excited at the idea of a ship being cut off from the great and wise Federation, where you'd start to see maybe dirt on the uniforms, and you'd start to see them having not a comfortable life and having, you know, scraping along. And I didn't really stay with the show beyond the first half of the first season, because it felt like, oh, well, we're all still in this perfect ship, and everybody's costumes are clean all the time. And like Galactica, for all its flaws, it really did acknowledge the idea of supplies being hard to come by and inequality of resource division. And, well, okay, they did have a giant super tanker full of top shelf liquor that nobody ever talked about. but that said, I think that one of the problems I had with the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was I just got frustrated at S.H.I.E.L.D. being so awesome all the time. And obviously I was supposed to, because when they kick it over, you're like, oh, wow, I miss S.H.I.E.L.D. And I give them credit for committing to the concept with this new season. Really feels. And when you talk about Coulson seeming callous about Fitz, you know, I wonder how much of that is down to him. Okay, A, is it really conscious? Are they really thinking about that? Let's presume they are. Then how much of it is down to him being stretched incredibly thin compared to last season by all of his new responsibilities? And that was something that I really dug about the opening episode, is there was huge character development in every character from the first season. None of them are who they were in the last season.
Right.
All of that character development was earned, you know, like seeing Skye as this confident, agent, seeing her and May having this charisma or this chemistry between them, you know,
and just the fact that she looks so much different too. Did you notice that?
Right. Yeah, totally. Her hairdo and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And May's whole personality is different without her having the secret she was holding all through the first season about Coulson, you know, and I really feel like I really love that these characters all are different now because the world is different. And I give them so much credit for that. We'll see how it plays out, but that's my initial thought. And I think I like the newly expanded cast. I have a hard time believing that they brought Lucy Lawless in just so she could die in a car.
Yeah, me too.
So I really think, you know, is she going to be another Deathlok? Is she going to somehow come back as some resurrected badass with a stone hand? I don't know. But I feel like we have not seen the last of her, because if so, it's a really surprising choice of what to do with that resource. You know, it's like if you're able to get David Gilmour to be in your band and then you hand him a tambourine, you know what I mean? So I'm really hoping that they have a plan, and I would not be surprised, because watching season one again, these people really do have a grip on playing a long hand. While they didn't make every episode great in the first season, the seeds of everything are right there for you to see almost every episode. So I have faith in them.
I did a little bit of binge watching before the season came out, and I didn't watch every single episode, but I watched a choice few, and it's like, oh, I see what they did there. You know, those moments, once you go back and watch it, like, oh, that explains how come, you know, they did a great job of that.
Yeah, they deserve credit for it, you know. Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't easy, so good for them. The other thing is, speaking of character development, is I feel really sure that we're set up for a redemption arc for Agent Cheeky Chappy, you know, the guy who's like, no, I'm not going to do what Coulson says. I'm going to go out and get Lucy Lawless killed in a car crash.
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah,
that
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then he lays there quietly, hoping Creel won't notice him.
Yeah.
You know, like we're in for a redemptive arc for him.
You think a redemption for him?
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. He's like a kind of a low calorie version of Spike from Buffy, I think. You know, where he's brought in to be a little British accented sand in the gears, you know, and eventually he's going to come around and be a part of the team.
Okay, well, I was kind of leaning more towards the other way of the spectrum on that one, on him. So
then he might go bad.
Go Hydra.
Yeah.
Well, it could happen.
Yeah,
it could happen. Go to the dark side.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what that goes, but I can see your point about the redemption arc could possibly happen with him very easily, actually, and be a nice little story too. Either way, I think it'd be a good story.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you guys who are familiar with the Marvel universe or made the German, the guy with the little black rimmed glasses from the beginning that you find out is still alive at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a character from the comics or is he just written in for the show?
I think he's a conglomeration of Red Skull soldiers.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an actual character. I never looked up completely, but I think he's a conglomeration.
The idea that there is somebody from World War II that's still around making trouble is a pretty classic one. This guy in particular, I don't really recognize. The one he reminds me of the most is in the Ultimates. You remember the Ultimates comic?
Right.
Gil, you read it, right?
Yep.
You know, during the World War II, Captain America has this Nazi enemy who it turns out is a shape-changing Chitauri, although the Chitauri in the comic are nothing like the ones in the Avengers movie, and that he's still around later, and he's like the bad guy for the big ultimate story. So he reminds me of that, but I mean, who knows, right?
I
think that he's more of a whole cloth creation.
Yeah. We'll see. They're definitely going to develop him into something. I bet you that he'll be appearing in the new Agent Carter series, too.
Yeah, oh, totally. You're right. You're right.
Very likely.
Yeah.
Now, here's something that I don't necessarily think is going to happen. I hope not, but it has the potential of devolving into this. Okay, so Hydra has stolen all of these artifacts, these things that were being they had been sealed away in the Triskelion, and now the remnants of S.H.I.E.L.D. are trying to reclaim these, and that's basically how they started off the first episode. I just hope that it doesn't become about that. I hope it doesn't become the Marvel version of Warehouse 13.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's also a question of how do they make it work, you know, because, like, you can be cheesy like Warehouse 13 or like the kryptonite-caused power of the month on Smallville, or, you know, maybe they can just use it. I think it all depends on the intelligence they bring to bear and how much it is used as a good vehicle to just help sustain reasons for them to do what they do, because a lot of that, you need stuff for them to do every week and how interesting they make it.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that they could incorporate in this, if this is, you know, and it's going to actually have to be part of the show, obviously, because that's part of their new agenda is to try and reclaim as much of this as they can. I will be very forgiving of it if, and this is a big if, when they reclaim an object that it just doesn't disappear and we forget that they've actually got this thing and that they actually use it in future episodes. And that's the thing that drives me crazy. Warehouse 13 is not the only one to follow that kind of premise, but you have these things at your disposal. We've seen you in previous episodes recover this thing, but then it's completely forgotten about and it's not used. Now, you know, in the old S.H.I.E.L.D., yes, there was bureaucracy and they didn't want these things getting out. They were sealed away. But this is the nitty gritty. This is down. This is a very small scaled down unit that's going to use every resource that they can possibly get their hands on to accomplish their ends. So it doesn't make sense that they wouldn't use these things if they can recover them. So all I'm saying is that if they go that route, don't just seal it away and forget that, you know, and pretend that we don't remember that they recovered this thing 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, I mean, sure, they could, like you guys are comparing to the Warehouse 13 gathering of the artifacts type thing. But also, I think every good comic book, I don't care how literature-based you are, every good comic book has a Deus Ex Machina, right? And I think that's what they're doing. They're gathering for future days when they're going to need one. I think they will use eventually something.
Yeah, hopefully some of this is the revolver on the wall, you know, in Act 1, right?
Yeah.
Right.
as they say. It's interesting to see how they set it up. Like, looking at Absorbing Man in this episode, and, like, he's always been one of my favorite Marvel villains. And he was, you know, he's different in this because, like, he doesn't have the same kind of trash-talking badass persona, you know, as in the comics.
Well, he's mainly,
you know,
quiet.
And I guess I have to, like, he hardly had any lines. Yeah. And this version is more of kind of like a pervert who gets off on his power, which, you know, I don't have a problem with it if they don't.
Yeah.
I like weird sexy content like that. It all depends on how you handle it. And I'm going to get back into this during Gotham, by the way. But anyway.
While you're at that, like you're saying, the pervy, like he had the drawers full of different materials to absorb and, you know, sit there and enjoy. I looked at it more as like a junkie rather than a perv. So.
Oh, that's good. So. That's good. Maybe I'm the pervert.
No. But I mean, they both, you know, whether it's drugs or sex, they both basically affect the same centers of the brain.
That's
so
true.
Yeah,
they're related.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought he was good. I watched parts of it again. I thought he looked great. I thought that in action, he looked fantastic. I wish for more action. And that's one of the things that where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is always a little bit of a letdown. It's when they try to do. And I think wisely they avoid big spectacle action for the most part because their budget will just never stretch to it. And when they do it, it's always a little like, you know. And again, as a lifelong Doctor Who fan, it is not my job to criticize special effects on TV shows, right? But that said, I mean, I feel like the show is most effective when it's not going for the big spectacle because the scene where he grabs that chain with the ball on it, you know, I was like, yeah, they found a way to do it, you know, without having the old timey ball and chain. Right,
exactly.
Which is, I loved. But then, you know, he basically like swings it once and then they move on to something else and the fight's basically over.
Yeah, they drop the hint and then they go.
Yeah, I really could have used a longer fight between him and May because it was just basically like, bam, they hit him with the shock thing and he takes a fall, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So what I'm hoping is, because he's always been a Thor villain back in the day, is that I really, and this is not going to happen, but this is, you know, geek fantasy football or whatever, like this is me really wishing that in Thor 3, since Thor's on Earth taking care of business now, at the start of Thor 3, just give me a scene where he has a proper fight with the Absorbing Man. Like, and they could really use big budget to do a real, because, I don't know if you know, Eric, but Gil, I'm sure you've seen Redson. Like, Absorbing Man can fight all of the Avengers.
Yeah,
like, he's real tough.
Yeah.
And if they went big, it would be fantastic in a movie. So just as an old Marvel zombie, I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Well, I know that his battles with Thor is like, holy crap, you know. There were times when Thor was down on a couple that guy can beat up Thor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. But yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying about, you know, the TV budget, it's going to be limited as far as special visual effects. But I think that they have at times, at least, and I'm thinking specifically of the episode after Thor 2 when Lady Sif showed up.
Yeah.
There were some really well choreographed action scenes in there.
Totally.
With some great fight scenes. And I was like, I would love to see more of that. And that's like what you were saying between May and Absorbing Man. I wanted, you know, I was expecting at least three or four minutes of a fight scene, and it just kind of ended prematurely, and I was kind of shrugging my shoulders, and I was like, well, I don't know, maybe they're saving that fight for later. I don't know.
Well, see, here's one thing I got with their fights, and all, even especially the gunfights, and when they come in and raid something, the Fitz night gun that, you know, they shoot it, boom, the guy's down, boom, the guy's down. Yeah. It's like, there's nothing to that, but it's kind of a cool
concept. Little bit of a cheat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Because in fact, this last episode, every time they'd do that, which was several times during the episode, every time they'd shoot someone, Isaac and I, night-night. That's fun.
One of the things that I like about how the Marvel things have gone is, while there is death that happens in them, I feel like one of the things that makes superhero stuff fun, in my opinion, instead of depressing, is non-lethal carnage.
Yeah.
You know, similar to the A-Team, I guess. And I feel like there's been a focus in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to go for non-lethal carnage, which I'm going to say is okay because, you know, when I see the kind of DC idea, which is you really wallow in it, you really, you know, dwell on the horrific side of the violence and everything, because they want everybody to know how grown up and serious they are. That, to me, honestly, it just kind of gets tired for me. And I find that I have a better time watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. not thinking about the fact that they're racking up a huge body count.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they come to the show for.
And I think they're doing that well. And I think that, it may be a little bit of a cheat, but oh my gosh, it's like, it's so much cooler. And I can, you know, like I think you said about the Superman movie, they made one that I couldn't take my kids to. They're Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're making, and also the rest of the whole Marvel movie universe, they're creating the scene where, hey, the kids can come and enjoy it, and you don't have to worry about them saying, why'd they have to die?
Yeah.
So,
well, here's where I fall in. I mean, this is a topic we brought up, you know, several times before, and I fall kind of like in the middle of this. Okay, something that drives me crazy in PG or PG-13 rated films is that there's no stakes, okay? Or that especially with superhero films, in a lot of cases, that they risk everything. They risk maybe sometimes thousands of lives in order not to kill the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that really, really bothers me. It's like, it's a cavalierness that I realize is not intentional, but it's a byproduct of this, we can't show the good guys killing the bad guy. But I don't feel that that's a problem in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
or in the Marvel film universe at all, because we've seen it happen. Now, there are characters who I think go to extreme lengths not to incur a body count,
mm-hmm.
or not to kill the bad guy, but I haven't seen a situation where everything was being risked just not to,
right.
So as not to kill the bad guy. Because that pulls me right out every single time. But I like the fact that they do make attempts not to kill, you know, not to take to produce a body count and not to kill anyone if it's at all possible. But, you know, we all know that if this is going to be anything related to the real world, that there's going to be injuries and deaths that are unintentional or that are byproducts, no matter how hard you try. And I don't see them stepping over that line. So, you know, props to the people behind Marvel, because they managed to you know, tread that line carefully,
yeah.
and they haven't stepped over it as far as I've noticed.
Speaking of which, Marvel, they do a great job of doing that. DC, they're kind of like turned the other way, like we kind of hinted at. Speaking of which, DC launched a TV series. Let's talk about this. Gotham. Well, okay, maybe not DC themselves, but it's from a DC product. Gotham. What do you guys think of that series premiere?
Can I go first?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right. Here's the thing, is to me, this show looks like tits on a board. It is just useless, you know? And I the thing is, I realize that I need to give this a shot, because I am sensitive to the fact that as a Marvel zombie, I'm kind of a partisan.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear people talk about being sick of reflexive anti-DC bias, right? And I think that's possible. You know, it could just be that, like, there gets to be a certain loser stink and we just all start to enjoy really making fun of it, you know? and so I want to try to be positive. It's the same attitude that led me to have a guardedly positive reaction to Spider-Man 2 before, or Amazing Spider-Man 2 before I came to my senses. So I gave this show a shot. And I think that, like, my big question is, why does this show exist? You know, like, what would I want from it? Because I think that the idea of doing a Gotham City show about the Gotham City PD could be fantastic. I love The Wire. It's one of my favorite shows ever. It's a cop show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a comic that was out many years ago called Gotham Central, which was about, you know, the Gotham PD and how impossible their job is, mm-hmm. you know, trying to be a cop in Gotham City. And how Batman occasionally crashes through the window and either saves the day or messes everything up or whatever. It was a really fascinating thing to do a comic about. And generally, it was really, really mature. I thought it was a really great piece of work. And so I would like this show to be more like that. But the problem is that this is an origin, right? Now, and for me, the origin part is never my favorite part of any superhero movie.
Yeah.
You know, and like in Amazing Spider-Man, how annoyed was I that we had to have the origin again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is with this is an origin story that never stops.
Right.
The entire show is an origin story that will never not be an origin story. So that's a problem for me. Some people might like it. Again, I don't know, you know. But to me, honestly, I look at this and I'm calling it the brand manager special. Because basically, brand manager who runs Batman for DC, you know, and who does handles movie and TV properties for DC in general, is going to be saying, well, the only character we're not embarrassed by is Batman, and he's the only one everybody really likes. So we really want Christopher Nolan to do a Batman TV show, but he never will. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick another character called Green Arrow and do a show that is essentially Christopher Nolan Batman on the small screen, because, and it has nothing really to do with comic book Green Arrow. You know, it's just that he's the guy that fits the suit. He's the Johnny Bravo, as it were, of being fake TV Batman. And I mean, again, I can rag on Arrow a lot, although I have to say I watched all of both seasons, and in the end, I enjoy the show, and we'll watch season three. But it's a show that I kind of watch and make fun of at the same time. But Gotham, I think, is even worse because, again, it's like handed to you like an insincere apology. Like, you want a Batman TV show? Here's the best we can do because we've got to keep Batman for the movies. So you're going to get literally every character that you've ever heard of in a Batman story, but it's all of their origins and they all know each other and they're all together all the time. And, you know, again, it's strictly an exercise of the brand manager finding a way to monetize and promote the ancillary brands of the Batman brands, which is why you've got the Penguin. Don't call me Penguin. And the Riddler. I'm not the Riddler. What, you know, like it's very frustrating. And
yeah, so,
and
that scene with the guy, you know, where he, well, what do you get when, and no more riddles. No, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Like how many big hammers do you need to hit me with?
Well, they
already told us that his last name's Enigma.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, this is what I mean when I say fan service that feels like an insincere apology, because it doesn't seem like they really get it. It's just like they're like, we got to put stuff in here to make the nerds jingle their bells, you know? And I feel like that's kind of what's going on here. I don't see a compelling reason for Poison Ivy to be in this as a girl and for them to change her name, because audiences are too dumb to know that she's going to be Poison Ivy if you say her name's Pamela Isley.
Yeah.
So we'll call her Ivy Pepper.
Yeah.
Okay. And I kind of shake my head because everything about it feels so tone deaf. And I think the show looks good. And I think the actors are almost all really good, like especially the kid that plays little Bruce Wayne. I think he's phenomenal. Like, actually, he was the best part of the show for me because he really felt like little Bruce Wayne. And I thought his part was unusually well written because I thought the script was pretty terrible for the rest of it. As far as like the dialogue was really stiff and the actors did all they could to sell it. But I just felt like it was really embarrassingly like kind of flat Geoff Johns style. I am telling you what I'm thinking and what I'm seeing kind of writing, you know, and I'm not a Geoff Johns fan. And
really?
And some of the creative choices are so baffling, like Commissioner Gordon's wife, Barbara, looking like a supermodel who also has a secret lesbian past with Renee Montoya.
I know. What was that?
Well, what it is they're just trying to make it grown up and awesome. And, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to say, well, Catwoman wasn't there when Bruce Wayne's parents were shot and the guy wasn't wearing a mask. Because, you know, everybody that does this does a different version of it. It's always being reinterpreted. Batman Year One did all kinds of stuff that I'd never heard of before, but it's great.
Yeah.
And so to me, this is just another iteration of a story that I don't think needs to be retold at this point, but they're doing it. So the question is, what are their artistic instincts going to be going forward? And I don't think that we have that much in terms of creative vision to look forward to. Pilots are always messy and kind of misshapen as they try to figure out what kind of show they want to do. But even by pilot standards, I thought this was a terrible, terrible pilot. And I think, honestly, it makes Arrow look like The Wire. And plus, okay, one last thing about The Wire is casting two of the prominent actors from The Wire in this pilot just made it worse for me, you know.
So
that's me. I did not like it.
All right, well, let me jump in because I know Eric's going to have a lot to say. But I looked at it from the point of view of a first-timer, not familiar with Batman world other than the Christopher Nolan films.
Right.
I looked at it that way because I knew for a fact they were not going to be true to the continuity. I just knew it. I mean, well, first of all, they got, like you said, everybody knows each other. I was like, no, but okay, I'll look at it from this point of view. Now, I thought it was very weird that Catwoman was, well, what will soon be Catwoman or eventually become Catwoman, was lurking around the whole time hearing around corners, I'm like, well, why? You know, they had to drop the hint. And then introducing all the characters, and like I said, the riddle thing, riddle me this, you know, no, I don't need to be hit over the head. But at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, some people don't know this. Okay, there's a reason behind. I mean, the Jim Carrey Riddler was horrible. So they got to make up for it. So they got to make him better. And although it was a wise casting choice, they just didn't have the script for Jim Carrey. So I thought, okay, these people are being introduced to the characters. Okay, they're going to be new to the comics. I mean, DC relaunched their comics anyway, the new 52, and then they relaunched them again with this 52 Earth's End or whatever they're doing. So it's like, okay, they're just relaunching, and you're just getting a brand new comic book. And then I looked at it from the point of view as, okay, what if they were different villains? They weren't in any comic book issue ever, and they're just introducing them as these are going to be potential villains. Why couldn't we just give them different names? The Penguin, okay, how about make him the Otter? Or, you know, just, you know, think of it as different. It's like, okay, that could have been a cool series. But they kept tying it into Batman, and they kept, like you said, jingling the bells of the nerds. They kept dropping in these little hints every so often. Oh, yeah, I remember that. That's, you know, it was good for that aspect for someone that has never seen a Batman comic. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay, it's a good buildup. Now I know why they're like this. And so from that point of view, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But from the continuity thing, that bugged the crap out of me the whole time. But, yeah, from a new point of view, I think from, you know, someone saying, oh, wow, oh, that's why there's a Penguin. Because that kind of seems weird that Burgess Meredith was walking around going, rah, rah, you know? It's like, why?
Yeah.
And now they say, oh, this is why he's a Penguin. Or this is why he's a Riddler. This is why he's mad at the cops, you know? Because they kind of treated him bad, that Edward Nygma guy. And then, what was the other? Poison Ivy. That's what. The Poison Ivy, it's like, when they said her name was Ivy, I'm like, what? But then again, from a non comic book reading person looking at it, it's like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. She's going to be Poison Ivy, I'll bet, you know. So it's weird. I think for a true comic book fan, a true DC fan, I think that they're going to be irritated throughout the whole series. But from someone that's new to comics, new to this culture, it's kind of a nice thing to do. At least you get a general idea. They're sticking with the general ideas anyway of the characteristics of the person. Okay, sure, they're origin stories, but hey, Sam Raimi made Spider-Man have naturally organic occurring webs, so we can almost accept anything. So I think that's true. If you look at it from a point of view of someone that has never been in comics, I think it's pretty decent. And there were moments. There were some moments, especially I loved the fact that Jim Gordon didn't like the violence. You know, like the guy being beat up in the alleyway, and showing also how they're showing how corrupt the Gotham Police Department is or could be. I think they did a good job of that part. I'm going to stick around for a couple more episodes, see what happens. After all, I stuck it out with Arrow and ended up being a fan, even though, again, the same thing with them. Their continuity is not there either.
Yeah.
All right, Kay. I agree with what you're saying, Gil, and that's why I think I said it already once before, that this is not going to be something that, unless they pull some rabbits out of their hat, that I think is going to largely make fans of the series happy. And I kind of knew that from the inception. Okay, and here I'm going to make a couple of comparisons here. First, I'm going to compare this to Bates Motel, which I know no one on this podcast watch. And I love the show. And I love Psycho. I'm a huge Hitchcock fan. We've talked about that before. But the thing about Bates Motel is it's a very much a reimagining. I mean, it's set in modern times. It's not set, you know, it takes the basic premise of Psycho and says, okay, what could possibly lead up to the events that happen in Psycho? What would build the psyche that becomes Norman Bates? And they go hog wild with this on the show. There are so many characters, so many subplot lines that really don't necessarily have anything to do with why Norman Bates becomes Norman Bates, but they do all tie in, and they've really, I think they've done an amazing job of creating this alternate end, really of developing this basic, very simple murder story into something that's actually quite complex. Now, I don't know if Gotham is going to do that. I hope that they do that, and I really did like the first episode, but it is a first episode, and it could go anywhere from here. I mean, if I had a dollar for every show that I liked the first episode and then stopped watching because it just ultimately disappointed me, I'd have a lot of dollars. But another comparison that I'm going to make is to the Star Trek reboot. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually surprised that I didn't hear Tim make this comparison, because it seemed kind of almost obvious to me. There, and as anyone who listens to this podcast knows, I like the reboot, but it is problematic. And the things that both Tims brought up about why they hate it are valid. I can't argue against them, because they are problems with the new franchise. They just didn't bother me as much as the things that I liked about the new franchise. But that much said, especially the second one, you talked about ringing the fanboys' bells. That's what one of the biggest problems is with the new franchise, especially with the second one, is like they're going down a checklist of Star Trek history and Star Trek icons. And they're saying, oh, well, we got to include this. The fans will like this. The fans will like this. And I think that they're doing a lot of that with Gotham, because they know that they're going to piss off the fans by changing a lot of the mythology, which they already have.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm one of those people, like you mentioned, the casual fan who really doesn't know that much about Batman mythos. But I've heard bits and pieces from my friends who are into it. I know who these characters are, and I could see a great potential for this show to go down the path of Bates Motel, of creating their own history that's independent of what has come before in the comics. And as you said, they have rebooted their own mythology how many times? Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's written in stone. It's not, you know, and especially for someone like me who's not read those stories, it, you know, I couldn't care less if they're rewriting Batman history, as long as it ends up in the same place as what has been generally accepted as, you know, at least in the movies, because this is popular culture. This is movies and television, which is something quite different from the comic books. The Batman movies are very, very recent history. So if they build up to something that is contradictory to what we've seen in the Nolan movies, then yeah, I would have a problem with that, because it is recent history, and because it should tie together, and it's the same people that are making it more or less. There should be some continuity there. But that much said, I'm enjoying the only character other than Bruce Wayne that we're seeing any real development for right now is the Penguin. And I love the actor that they cast as the Penguin. And I think he's very, very interesting to watch and very unpredictable. And I'm curious where this trip is going to end. And I wasn't bothered by the fact that Catwoman or Selina Kyle, assuming that it is Selina Kyle and that they're not changing the name like with Ivy. I like the fact that she's kind of our entry into this world, and that she's there for all these things. And I think I really do believe that that's going to pay off. But I think that other than Bruce Wayne himself and, of course, Jim Gordon, and also the Harvey Bullock, is a character that I'm completely unfamiliar with, but I like that actor that's playing Donald Love that part. I like him in almost everything I've ever seen him in, and I think he's good casting for this part, even though I don't know who the character is, but I enjoy watching him in this part. But other than those characters that are obvious primary characters in the show, I really think that they've got something big in mind for Selina Kyle or Catwoman or whoever she proves to be. And I think that she's going to be very heavily tied in with Bruce Wayne's progression to being Batman. And I think that the fact that we don't have any reason to believe that these two characters had a history together as children, it could result in something really interesting. But like I said, it's all speculation at this point, because it is just a first episode.
Yeah, uh-huh. Let me give a little idea here. As the eternal optimist that I am, I'm always trying to make things better than what they usually are. And sometimes it's good, sometimes bad. But I'm looking at this. It's actually a kind of a working theory here. This Gotham, it may be the DC Universe's answer to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is tying in everyday series with the movies. Maybe they're going to start doing that with this new, you know, the new Justice League movie that they're creating. Maybe they're creating this for that movie. And maybe maybe this origin could be tied in with the way that movie goes. I don't know. But I think if so, it'd be a neat idea. Other aspect of it is comic books are constantly, like right now, they're getting ready to kill off Wolverine. Okay. Right. Thor is a woman. Sam Wilson's taking over the helm of Captain America. They're constantly changing things in comic books. And, you know, if a TV series wants to change that, if they do it right, if they do good writing, I think I could accept it. Because, I mean, hey, I kind of like the female Thor idea. I think I could handle a little change here and there. So being the ever optimist, I'd say maybe they've got a plan for this. Maybe they're working this in with a new series and they're going to do an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. type tie-in. Who knows? I don't know. I think it could be good. Yeah, the continuity's not there where it used to be, but look at Marvel Comics. They've lost a lot of their continuity here and there and had to go back. I mean, after all, Peter Parker was not Peter Parker for a while. He was Ben Reilly. I don't know.
I will throw continuity under the bus in the service of a good story every time. I don't care a bit about continuity. And I think that the idea of Selena being an entry point into the series and some kind of interesting through line that draws the things together, maybe they'll pull it off. I think my negative feeling was that looking forward to the show, I mean, obviously they've got a plan. They're thinking of this and that. But looking forward from what I saw in the pilot, I don't have a lot of faith in the people who are putting it together because I don't feel like they put their best foot forward, you know, based on the things that I said. But again, I'm going to be tuning in basically until you guys quit, I guess, unless I end up really liking it, because I might. You
know? I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like right off the bat, I was so negative about this. I'm like, holy cow, why do we need this? Why? But then I'm going to give it a chance. I'm not saying it's going to be good or bad, but like you said, Tim, if there's good writing involved, I'll take it. If they do a great job, I'll take it.
That was the weakest point of this episode was the quality of the writing.
Yeah.
And the thinking that was put into bringing it together and just the general unpleasantness of everything in the episode, honestly. But, you know, again, it's Gotham. It's not supposed to be Fun City.
I think they tried to throw everything that they had in there during the pilot. You know, they said, okay, we got it all. We got to get it in now.
Yeah.
Or people I think that might have been the problem that they ran into.
Yeah, I think you may be right there as well. The premise, when I heard that they were doing this, I was just like, really? That sounds like a really lame idea for a TV show. And I'm not generally a big fan of origin stories either. And it wasn't until I saw the first trailer, and I think I'm sure the visuals have a lot to do with it, but I was sold when I saw the trailer because I was like, okay, I haven't seen this detailed of visuals being done on a TV show for a long time, if ever. And I mean, that is the number one thing that I love the most about the show is the art direction. The police station is amazing set design. That is in and of itself an accomplishment. I love the way that set was designed.
Yeah, with the jail cells right there by them too.
Yeah, but just the gothic looking architecture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the and of course I saw the promo piece. It was like a half hour that aired a couple of weeks before the show premiered. That's, you know, mostly a fluff piece where everyone, you know, a bunch of talking heads congratulating each other on such a brilliant job. But there was a lot in there that actually sold me on it. And one of the things where they're talking about the concept for the show visually and going how they wanted Gotham to look like New York of the 70s, because crime was kind of rampant then and the city was completely filthy. And if you look at the cars are very much reminiscent of 70s makes and models, but you know, it's still a modern setting and there's a lot of mix and match in that. And I kind of like that concept from what I've seen of it so far, at least. The other thing that I really like a lot is the, I love the character. I love the actor that's playing Jim Gordon. I mean, there's a lot going on behind his eyes, and I just there just seems to be an integrity and a passion there right from the get-go that I don't know that necessarily every actor could pull off. And I also really like the kid that's playing Bruce Wayne. I think that he's seems to be very talented for someone his age. And I got to admit, I got chills a couple of times during the scenes between Gordon and Bruce Wayne, that it just, there was just a connection there. And I was like, something inside of me said, okay, I want to see where this relationship goes. I want to see how these two influence each other. And I mean, I think that's really going to be the heart of this story. And you know, I'm sold on it. We'll just have to see where it goes.
Don't forget, we got another DC based TV series coming out. Well, besides Arrow going to come back, but The Flash, they're going to be doing a TV series of that coming up really soon. So,
yep.
I'm hoping they put as much fun into it as the actual comic book The Flash is. The Flash is a fun comic.
It would be really reassuring, yeah, to see if DC can actually handle the concept of something being enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what I mean.
Like, yeah.
Like not having to prove how grown up and serious they are in every scene. You know, it would be nice if they could be a little lighthearted.
Yeah, and the Flash is
dark, that's for sure. And especially at the end where the penguin comes out of the water and, you know, slashes some poor fisherman's throat for a sandwich. But, you know, that's kind of the world that Christopher Nolan has established.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in keeping with that. I didn't expect they were going to deviate from that.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. When he killed for that sandwich, I'm like, yep, it's dark. So yeah, sure enough, the whole episode was. But no, I think I'm looking forward to The Flash coming out. And it looks, I mean, the actor they got playing it, the part he had already played in Arrow as Barry Allen, he was having fun with it. He was quirky. And I think if they do keep with that in the series and not keep it dark like Arrow, I think they'll, you know, turn me around on DC properties when it comes to TV and film. Because if they can keep it fun, we can have fun. But what was it, the 90s series of The Flash? Did you guys ever watch that?
I vaguely remember it.
That one, they tried to be fun, but it's very dated now if you look at it. But they tried to have a little bit of fun with it, but at the same time, I think they were too influenced by the Dick Tracy movie on trying to focus on color palettes rather than anything else. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But yeah, TV this season, Constantine coming up. You guys going to be watching that?
Yeah. Oh, hell yes.
I'll give it a shot.
I'm liking the previews, all the trailers. They did a little fluff piece on that one too. Looks like that's going to be another good one. Again, I'm giving all of them a shot. I'm with you, Tim. I'm giving them all of these guys a shot. Hopefully
I did read something, though, that spoke about Constantine and kind of wondering where it's going to go, since they said that Supernatural has pretty much raided that goody shelf.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're kind of right. They did kind of already do that stuff, but, you know, who knows.
And it looks like they're keeping a little bit of humor in that one, too, which is odd, because that's like one of the darker properties of a comic book, and yet they're like, okay, we're going to stick with the humor that they have in this one. Maybe because it is.
Constantine's a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's a very funny guy, just very dark humor.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, at least they focus on that. So,
and this is one of the few characters, comic book characters, that I've actually read more than a few issues of, thanks to Tim Coker, who turned me on to the comic in college. Yeah. Yeah, you did. You got me started watching and reading the Alan Moore Swamp Things, and then from there I went on and read a bunch of Hellblazers, and I loved them. I thought they were brilliant. I just absolutely couldn't get enough of that, so I'm very excited about that. Hopefully they will get it right, and because I was excited to see the Constantine movie until I found out they were casting Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, lucky you.
But coming up before the next time we do another podcast is for Doctor Who fans of David Tennant, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Grace Point is going to be coming up, which is a remake of a British series, which I can't remember the name of right off, Broadchurch.
And David Tennant played the same role, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it's still on. They just got renewed for a second season, so he's going to be doing Broadchurch, the same character of Broadchurch on British TV with his native Scottish accent, and he's going to be doing the same character with an American accent. It's weird. I don't think this has ever happened before, and I haven't seen the original British series. I would love to, but
I got
it's
hooked
not on
it.
Netflix or anything. So
they showed it on BBC America, and I accidentally stumbled on it. I'm like, oh, David Tennant, hey, I'd like to see this. What he does other than Doctor Who, I'd like to see some of his other roles. And I got hooked. It was they did a great job. It was a great story. And I'll tell you what, and they also got my wife hooked. That's rare for her to get hooked to a non-reality TV show. It's like, she goes, when's that on again? It's like, okay. And it was, I mean, beautifully written, beautifully, the way they put it together, it's like a movie stretched out in several episodes, like most BBC series are.
Right, yeah. And I have read that they said that the show will start off pretty much in sync with the British series, but they said that they plan to go in a very different direction. So that's interesting. Cool. But I would like to see the British series for first, and but I doubt if I'll get that chance. It's not on Netflix or Amazon Prime, but I keep an eye out. If you guys hear of if it's playing, you know, streaming or anything, let me know, because I am curious to see it.
Well, one of the things about that series is basically a murder happens or a dead body's found.
Right.
And there was a series on TV before. I can't remember when or I can't remember the name, but I know I've heard it, the premise before.
The Killing.
Yeah, that might be it. But we're basically everybody in each episode, a new person becomes a suspect. And it was so cool. And then they finally wrap it up, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, that sounds like The Killing. In fact, when I read the plot synopsis for it, I was like, oh, sounds like The Killing. And The Killing, unfortunately, disappointed a lot of people with the end of the first season. And none of the subsequent seasons were anywhere near as good as that first season. But yeah, I mean, every episode was they were on to a new suspect, and then, you know, they prove to have an alibi or whatever. And the next episode, they'd be on to someone else. And then a lot of times they come back to a previous suspect because new evidence has popped up. The actors in that were really, really good. Joel Kinnaman, who was the new RoboCop, and Marielle Enos, who's this really, really good redheaded actor I love watching her, and I hope she has a good career, because I'd go see her in just about anything. Although she was in that movie with the new Schwarzenegger movie, what was it called? Horrible movie.
Expendables 3?
No, that I knew that's going to be horrible.
I was going to say, name the last three Schwarzenegger movies, and you're going to name the horrible movie. So.
Yeah, he plays the DEA agent with the team. It's from the guy that did Training Day. Mm. Just horrible script. I mean, absolutely terrible.
Schwarzenegger,
but she was
really
interesting. But she was interesting in it. I mean, even though her dialogue was outlandish, I mean, she committed to it, though. And, I mean, you got to give her props.
All right. So then also coming up, we've got Walking Dead coming up in October. You've also got Supernatural going to be making its I heard the final season of Supernatural. It's odd because Dean is now a demon, so this could be an interesting season. We're going to have fun this season. We'll be able to nitpick a lot of crap. I'll tell you what, we need to call an end to this here podcast. By the way, I'm going to go see Box Trolls. The artwork on that, I'm just so intrigued. I just think it's going to be kind of an interesting venture. Isaac's he's like, but it's a cartoon, Dad. I'm like, yeah, but look at that. And I keep saying the artwork, and he goes, you just want to see it because it looks like it might be funny. I'm like, no, I want to see this artwork. You don't understand. But I'm going to be seeing that tonight. Also going to be seeing The Equalizer sometime this weekend. The weekend of movies is going to be filled. On top of that, Doctor Who is tonight, and then tomorrow is The Strain, and in Manhattan. And
oh, yes. Isn't this the season finale for The Strain?
Is it?
I think it is.
Oh, wow. They're doing so great with that.
Yeah.
They're sticking with the story really well. I mean, there's parts of it that they're leaving out, but, you know, hey, you got to leave some out, I guess. go read the book. You're better off anyway. On the review of The Maze Runner, that's one of the best things I heard out of Isaac's mouth, the review at the end of it. I said, well, all in all, what'd you think of the movie? I said, I thought it was a pretty good movie, having not read the book. Isaac said, well, it's all right, but go read the book. It's way better. I was like, yes, that's good.
I saw a comment from Miles Teller, who I guess is the star of that show and who I've heard is a, you know, really talented up and coming actor. He said that doing The Maze Runner made him feel cold and dead inside.
Oh, okay. I love the cliffhanger at the end of that movie. It is a young adult movie, but I thought I was entertained. Guys, I guess let's end this thing. Let's call it quits, and we'll move on to bigger and better things. Next podcast is always bigger, always better. And also, our weekends are always big and better. So, all right, guys, thanks again for joining me this week here on the Nerd Up Podcast. Once again, I'm Guilty Wilson. Don't forget, you can contact us at Nerd Up Podcast on Twitter. Or, even better, you can go to the website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com, and you can leave us a voicemail. I've got a couple new tweets this week from fans that said, hey, I like the podcast. And so every time I reply back to them, I always say, hey, leave us a voicemail, because I kind of like that. When Alan started a little trend there with leaving some voicemails for us, we included them in the podcast. It's kind of a neat deal to do. So feel free to do that. We'll put you in the next podcast. So in the meantime, again, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill, ericbill.
And I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me at Tim K. Has to Say.
And that's it for the podcast this week. Talk to you next time. Stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
The www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.